Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today on the program, I'll be talking with Terry Cluche, author of the fantasy novels The Demon Inside and The Balance of Power, which are the first two novels in his Zone War series. Terry Cluche grew up on a 25-acre hobby farm in a small town more than an hour's drive from Ottawa, Canada. He claims that this was the best childhood anyone could ask for, despite the fact that the family's old farmhouse lacked any form of insulation or modern plumbing. One of Terry's greatest joys as a child was his bi-monthly trips to Ottawa to visit the library, where he found himself lost in the spellbinding worlds created by such masters as Edgar Rice Burroughs, C.S. Lewis, Robert Heinlein, and Arthur C. Clarke. A voracious reader like his parents, Terry's lifelong passion for books finally manifested in the mid-90s when he launched Bagabook, one of the first virtual bookstores in Canada. After much success with his business, Terry's underlying passion for writing took flight, and after watching a late-night rerun of the 1940s movie The Secret Lives of Walter Mitty, he was inspired to write the Zone War series. And there's a question there. I am going to find out about this very interesting old movie that inspired this series. So thanks so much for joining us today, Terry.
Well, thank you, Juanita. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great, and congratulations on this series. You know, it seems like readers are just really eating this trilogy up.
Oh, yeah, they are. It's great to be able to touch people like this.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about the inspiration. I'm really fascinated by this old 40s movie.
Yeah, the Walter Mitty stuff. Well, I'd read it actually when I was a teenager in high school,
mm-hmm.
and I really, really could relate to it since I did a lot of daydreaming myself.
Mm-hmm.
With this whole storyline, and then I saw the rerun of the movie one time, and I thought, you know, it'd be great to have a main character like Walter Mitty that daydreams like that into a fantasy world.
Okay, so
that's where the concept came from.
Oh, interesting, because that's really, I mean, this is a very interesting part of your series, because it's not like the typical fantasy novel. I mean, this is based kind of in real time, and then more in a fantasy mind world.
That's right. That's exactly it. It's definitely not a traditional fantasy story, this one.
Mm-hmm.
Far from it, in fact. So if people are looking for Lord of the Rings or something like that, they're not going to find it in this series, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. So you've been writing, I know, for years, stories and poems. It's a pretty big jump going from just casual writing to really the serious task of writing a book and then going through the whole publishing aspect of it. So tell us if you have always had this idea that you wanted to put books out there.
Well, I wouldn't say that I had the idea that I wanted to put books out there. I've always needed to express myself, whether it was in painting or writing, mm-hmm. poetry, whatever. But I never really took it seriously until basically, I just became fed up with the fantasies, the stories that were out there, and it all just seemed to, the idea of it seemed to all come together, and I started putting words down, and they kept going, and
mm-hmm.
it just progressed from there.
Mm-hmm. When did you start this series? What year?
It was in 2004.
Oh, it's been really recent then.
Yeah, fairly recent, that's right.
So how long does it take you to write a full one of these books? I mean, you've got two out so far.
Well, yeah, Balance was a lot easier because obviously the second book in the series, I knew where I was going with The Demon Inside. I was plucking away to begin with and, you know, wavering here, going there. Wasn't really sure where I was going. It's once I finally found my path, you know, like The Demon Inside took me basically 2 years and The Balance of Power less than a year.
Okay.
So.
Well, interesting. So one more thing about your background, you know, from what I can tell, reading was a huge outlet for you in your childhood, and I know you've mentioned before that it kind of helped you escape some of the hard times that you experienced.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, like I said, with C.S. Lewis or any of those Heinlein, Arthur C. Clarke, there's so many authors and so much reading that I did. That's all we could do. We we had a television that got two channels, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of thing. And there wasn't a lot to do other than chores. And if I could get away from doing chores by reading, I'd do it,
mm-hmm.
understandably.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So what was it about the fantasy and science fiction? I know a lot of little boys or young boys are drawn to that. But, you know, with all of the books out there in the library, what was it in particular about those genres for you that captivated you?
I guess it was the idea that the magic and anything could happen in these worlds. Whereas, say in a science fiction story, there were certain rules and things that you had to follow. In fantasy, there were no rules, at least it seemed to me at the time. Anything could happen from page to page. You never knew what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And that's what I loved about it. It was all open.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that those that you're writing now in the same genre that really inspired you back then.
Yeah. Yes, because I didn't only read fantasy. I read everything, Max Brand, Louis Lamora. I was reading everything I could get my hands on.
Okay.
In the library, they probably hated seeing our family walking in because they were going, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Half our books are going to go.
Oh, really? Would you take a lot out?
All of us were voracious readers. We'd take every to the maximum each time. You know, we had a little orange Volkswagen Beetle, and it was full of books on the way home.
Oh, that's
It was great.
Funny.
Oh. Yeah, it is, actually. So, and we're all still voracious readers to this day. That hasn't changed.
Is that right? Well, tell us a little bit about your parents' influence, then.
Well, basically, what they left it up to me what I wanted to read. I mean, but when you see your parents always reading that as a child, very young child, you're going, well, there must be something to this. What's it all about?
Mm-hmm.
So they'd sit, they'd read to me a little bit, and you'd get intrigued with the storylines before I knew it. I was reading books my father was reading, and I was seven, you know. And
wow.
Yeah.
So wow.
It just progressed from there.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on children these days and how reading isn't as important as maybe it was back then? You know?
Yeah, that's a shame. It really is, because it opens up so many avenues, reading. Children, you know, I guess sitting in front of a computer playing a game or something, they're not getting the same kind of input that they can from a book.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much information in books that you don't even realize that you're gaining as you're reading,
mm-hmm.
you know. But over time, you're getting a wealth of knowledge that no video game or TV show will ever give you.
Yeah. I imagine it also really inspires creativity as well that a video game wouldn't.
Absolutely. That's one of the things our boys, unfortunately, were not readers ever, and they were sadly lacking in that very thing, creativity. A lot of times they'd say, I'm bored, what can I do? And then when I was a kid, I never had a problem with being bored. There was always something to do.
Yeah.
You know, and it's too bad, because I think reading stimulates the mind.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So interesting. Okay, so tell us about your main character, Edward Fox.
Oh, Edward.
Mm-hmm.
He's certainly a sympathetic fellow. I mean, you can't help but feel bad for him, which is what I wanted,
mm-hmm.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone through a lot of bad things in his life that's put him where he is in this storyline, unfortunately. The biggest issue, of course, being for him is when he was 12 years old, he was kidnapped and tortured by a very bad man,
mm-hmm.
which, you know... And that's how this the zone was created for him, and that's the whole basis of this story, is he spent his whole life basically hiding from what happened.
Okay. So was there any kind of real-life inspiration that...
No, none whatsoever. Actually, mm-hmm. like I said, I used the starting point of Walter Mitty, but Walter Mitty was basically, if your listeners are familiar with the story, he was basically just a normal, everyday guy that like the daydream, he had no real reason for hiding out other than boredom, I guess,
mm-hmm.
and maybe his wife, who bothered him a lot, as I recall. But with Edward, I wanted something a little more tragic than simply that. There had to be a reason for this world that he created and why he needed to hide.
Mm. How old is he?
He's roughly in his 40s, 41, 42, that age.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But when this occurs, this kidnapping, it was when he was 12, and I use flashbacks and that sort of thing throughout the novels to give you ideas of what really happened to him. Not graphically, I don't go that far,
mm-hmm,
but,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And that's a very interesting point about this book, that you do use those flashbacks. It's very,
yes.
very
yes.
interesting.
I use them a lot, and I don't know actually if it's ever been done in fantasy. I've never read it before, but there are quite a few flashback scenes throughout both books.
So was it a problem for you in the writing process, kind of jumping back and forth from the real world to fantasy and flashback? And
I wouldn't describe it as a problem. I knew there was a danger, though, doing it, that you can sort of alienate your readers if you know, you can disrupt the flow of the story quite easily by doing this.
Mm-hmm.
The key, which I felt from the beginning, was it was necessary to slowly unravel to the reader what really happened to Edward and why he's like this.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I made sure to keep the flashback scene short enough that people wouldn't find that the whole storyline was breaking up on them, you know, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
That it kept a steady flow.
Mm-hmm. So you're basically introducing Edward in the first book, The Demon Inside. So
right.
his flashback, do they carry through into the second book as well? Or?
Absolutely. It's an ongoing storyline from when Edward is a child, but a year after his torture in the first book,
mm-hmm.
where he's seeing a child psychologist. And it progresses from there through other things that happened to Edward when he was younger. You know, he had other incidents in his life that further damaged him,
mm-hmm.
and kept him constantly hiding out in the zone from, you know, he started to believe his life was, his real life was nothing but a hardship for him, and only in the zone could he experience happiness.
Okay.
So
tell us then about the zone.
Well, the zone is a very, very complex world that he's created over the many years of his life. Basically, inside there, when he hides in there, he can be whoever he wants, which is I guess his escape. But what the key to the zone is the memories of the people that have harmed him in his real life have never been able to get inside. He shuts a door basically, and they can't bother him in there.
Mm.
He's free from them, at least temporarily in his mind. He's free. But the basis of the story begins where those memories have found a way inside with him, and he's trapped inside there with them, and he has to deal with them now, and he can't get away.
Okay.
Because that's what he spent his whole life doing, is running and hiding from these memories, and now he can't.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So were you wanting to really bring that whole psychological issue? Because, you know, this is a fiction, a novel, you know, when mm-hmm. people go through serious trauma, I mean, this is kind of what they do. They will disassociate and create different realities for themselves.
Absolutely they will, and that's the whole concept of it. I think most people reading it would understand could see how that could happen, especially to a 12-year-old boy to begin with.
Yeah.
How people could do that. A lot of people shut down after traumas like this,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure, you know, even less than this. So I don't think it's a stretch for the reader to see how this could definitely have happened to a person, mm-hmm. you know.
So what happens in book one, in The Demon Inside?
As far as what
how does it go? The story kind
well,
of unfolds.
Well, basically, it begins with Edward. You learn that one of the worst memory of all, the man that actually tortured him when he was a child, who's long dead, but he still lives on in Edward's memories. Edward learns that man has now found a way inside his own, and he's not safe even there from him, and so he decides to kill himself because he can't take it anymore.
Oh. God.
But
okay.
the problem for Edward is he jumps from a cliff, but he doesn't do the job properly, and he ends up in a coma, trapped inside this zone, with all the characters throughout his life appearing as different characters in the zone with him.
Mm-hmm.
You see, some of them are there to help him, and some of them are there to hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about his interpretation of how these people in real life, you know, affected him. That's how they show up in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
They may not be exactly how, you know, you remember them in the real life, but he's twisted them to his own needs.
Mm.
And sometimes for the reader, it's not obvious who each person is, but each person in the zone is someone in Edward's real life, major character anyways.
Yeah, and through the series, we get to find out who...
Yes, I slowly reveal it. I like to put it a little bit at a time.
Yeah.
You know.
I think that's just such a brilliant concept, in that whole idea of being trapped. You know,
mm-hmm.
in his own mind, in this, where he has to face really his demons. I mean, I think it's really, it's such a fascinating concept.
It is an interesting concept. The whole idea is that he basically is going to heal himself one way or the other because he's never been able to before. This is his last try.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing's ever worked for him to get away from this, and he's basically forcing himself to heal or not,
mm-hmm.
I guess you could say.
This is really almost more of a psychological thriller than it is a fantasy.
In a lot of ways it is, and I actually wrote it that way, that one of the things I personally find in fantasy books is, you know, some of these you can pick up and they're 800-900 pages.
Yeah.
And you wade through page after page after page of stuff, and nothing ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not putting them down, mind you. I mean, there's some fantastic stuff out there, but I wanted a series, a book, a series, the whole thing, that it's almost like a breakneck pace of things happening,
mm-hmm.
and that's how this works.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have told me that, you know, they're up to 3-4 in the morning because I don't let them put the book down.
There's no pause.
Each chapter leads you to the next, and you have to know what goes on from chapter to chapter. It's not like, okay, well, that was a nice description of a tree. I can go to sleep now. You know, I don't do that. It's almost like a cliffhanger ending after at each end of chapter, which is what I wanted all along.
Yeah.
So that you're almost forced to turn the page because you've got to know what that meant.
Yes.
The page before, you know.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So how do you plot this all out when you're writing? I mean, tell us a little bit about your process.
Well, that's a funny thing. I work all these things out in the oddest of places, believe it or not, in the shower or in the car or things like that.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I actually think people must think I'm nuts sometimes because I'm driving in my car and I'm having conversations with my characters.
Oh.
You know, and I can just imagine what they're thinking. Because I find verbalizing, you know, if it's Edward or something, there's different ways you say things depending on the situation. So how will he say that? And then I jump to whoever he's talking to. And so I'm going back and forth in my car, and I can just imagine what people are thinking, but it works for me. So
you need to get a cell phone with a little earpiece, and, you know, people will see that and not think you're crazy.
You know, it doesn't matter to me. I'm having a blast doing it. So.
That's great.
Yeah.
So do you have, like, flow charts? Are you really one of those kind of authors where everything is very organized and...
I haven't written down one thing about plot lines or anything since I've started this. It's all in my head.
Oh, really?
I know other people, other authors do that. I've heard of it being done all the time, and I don't know why, but it drives my wife nuts, actually.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell her, hey, this would be a good idea for this, and she'll go, you've got to write that down, you'll forget.
Mm-hmm.
But I never do.
But you don't.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, well, obviously the creative inspiration is that strong that
it must be.
Mm-hmm.
It's all just lodged in a place, and when I need that idea back again, I just go for it, and there it is. So
mm-hmm.
It's great, actually.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Established in 1998, Rebecca's Reads is a book review and publicity service serving a large reading audience as well as a wide community of authors, publishers, publicists, and buyers and sellers. They offer reviews of recently published books as well as chapter readings, teasers, and videos to help you decide what book you would like to read next. Their insightful author interviews take connecting reader and author one step further, and if you decide you would like to purchase a book, an easy-to-navigate link will allow you to purchase the book immediately online. For the authors, publicists, and publishers, Rebecca's Reads has a variety of publicity services to help them market their book to their reading audience. Their services are budget-friendly and effective. For buyers and sellers, they have a monthly list of current reviews in the Book Review Index for easy browsing, as they know your time is precious and efficiency is the priority. Be sure to visit RebeccasReads.com and browse around their new space. Whatever your literary need, this user-friendly website may be just what you're looking for. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm speaking today with Terry Cluche, author of the Zone Wars series. His first book, The Demon Inside, and the second, The Balance of Power, can both be purchased through online and local booksellers. And you can find out more about Terry Cluche through his website, thezonewar.com. I can't imagine. I mean, some of the names of your characters, I would have a hard time remembering those, really.
Well, there's a lot of characters in these books. There's no question about that. And I got to admit, there are times... Occasionally, I do get a little confused about some of the minor characters. Okay, I know there was this guy back in Demon, he said this and that. What was his name again? But other than that, the major ones I never get confused with.
Yeah.
But we are talking of hundreds and hundreds of characters.
Yeah.
But that's the beauty of the idea, because everybody in the zone is somebody Edward knew or saw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have to be people he actually spoke with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a scene in book two where someone's telling him, well, think about all the people you've seen in your life. Every one of them is in your memory somewhere. And that's who's populating the zone, is every person Edward's ever seen in his life. Not necessarily talked to, but walking down the street, he sees somebody. Well, they end up in the zone because his memory hasn't forgotten them.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That is so interesting.
Yeah. That's
I love the psychological depth of this. I really think it's...
It's actually a very deep storyline, mm-hmm. if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You can't help but feel for Edward and pull for him, and that's the idea.
Yeah.
And hope he will heal. Although I'm not giving out any,
no.
any clues to that at the end.
No, don't do that. So
yeah.
Would you say that he was your favorite character, or who, I mean, with all of the characters that you've written here, you have
favorite? Well, you know, I should be saying Edward's my favorite character. After all, he is the main character. But for me, my favorite character actually turned out, I'd have to say is Tagger the Assassin.
Oh.
He's a very nasty character that I created, and I've absolutely fallen in love with him. He's fantastic.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. He was actually initially, I created him for a single scene in The Demon Inside. He
mm-hmm.
was to show up once, kill somebody, and disappear. But unfortunately, he took over the scene, and I kept him, and now he's a major part of the series.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of people tell me that he's so evil, you have to like him.
Oh, my God.
It's one of those love-hate characters. You love him because he's so bad.
Yeah. Well,
he makes no bones about it. He loves to kill. That's the idea with this guy, and,
mm-hmm.
and he's very evil, but you can't help but like him.
Well, I hope he turns around by book three.
I don't see that happening.
Oh, no.
No, he's definitely the kind of guy that is not going to all of a sudden get religion, if you will, or become a nice person.
Yeah, no.
Far from it.
Okay.
Yeah. But he is one of Edward's demons. Which is revealed in book two. He's most of my major characters, all of them, like I said, are somebody that he knew in real life that had an impact on him, either good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And this Tagger the Assassin was actually a character in his real life that had a bad impact.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to deal with him as well as some of the other problems.
Okay. So the zone, is this kind of just an alternate reality of this world, or is the, like, can you describe how,
well,
it's
like a medieval world, but the
oh,
beauty
okay.
of it is, the beauty of it is it's a world though that is seen from the perspective of Edward, so it can do anything he wants. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
necessarily have to adhere to what we, you know, think of as a medieval world, or, you know, anything can happen because
okay.
it's Edward that's pulling the strings.
Okay, so this is where we get into the concept of him having all the power.
Exactly. He does have the power, but what he's done is put himself in a position where he should have the power to change anything he wants, and he really is beneath the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
That's understood. He even understands that he's doing this to himself, but he can't physically do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
He's put himself in a position where part of his mind is pulling the strings, but the other part can't do anything to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to depend on everybody else to help him achieve his goal of controlling the zone again.
Okay. So tell us about book two, The Balance of Power. How are we seeing the story move forward?
In The Balance of Power, you get to know a lot more of intimately the major characters and how they relate to Edward.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more. Plus, I do a lot of, I put Edward on his own. He's out on his own without the help of his friends this time. And he basically grows in book two a lot more. He learns, what his goals are, what he needs to achieve to get back control of the zone.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
So tell us about this this mysterious power that we begin to hear about in this second book, The Master Eye.
Yes, the Master Eye is actually imperative to his power, simply because if you've read a lot of fantasy, you know there's always some sort of a sword or some sort of magical artifact that,
mm-hmm.
that is the source of power. And for Edward, it's the Master Eye because it has connections to his real life, which, if you've read the series, it's hard to explain, but basically the Master Eye has the power to achieve what he needs to control the zone, and he has to find it.
Okay.
But he unfortunately can't get it at the moment.
He can't. Okay.
No.
Interesting.
Yes.
So, you know, you mentioned that the demon inside is more plot-driven and the balance of power is more focused on character development. And I know that I've read this. Reviewers are commenting on that. They like that. Was that intentional?
Oh, absolutely, it was intentional. No question about it. I felt that the readers needed to know, like I said, the major characters in the zone, more about them and why they relate to Edward in his real world. And the connections between the two. That's why I would throw in flashbacks, say for Taga, and another man who's a mob hitman in real life, who's named Walter Alban Taggart, that young Edward ran into. So you see the connection with the assassin and the hitman.
Oh, I see.
That sort of thing. So there's a lot of characters like that that I develop much more in the Balance of Power to give you the insights.
It's more depth. I understand.
Much more depth. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So now you are in the process of writing book three. Where are you going? Is that, I mean, first book was more plot, second was character development. What are your intentions for the third?
I think we're going to go, now that there's no reason to return to character definitions anymore, I think we're going to go back to a lot of plot driven and that sort of thing with book three. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's the plan at this stage. I'm still in the early works of it.
Oh, okay. With lots of twists and turns.
Absolutely. Those have been set up since the beginning. You'll definitely see a lot more of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's
a few surprises I have left for the Master Eye that should catch people by surprise.
Oh, good.
Yes.
That's part of your writing style.
That's
sure.
part of the whole writing style is to expect the unexpected.
Yeah, I love it.
That's one of the things I don't like about fantasy books. A lot of them is, after about 10, 15, 20 pages, you already can tell what's going to happen.
It's a lot of fantasy novels are very generic. They're
that's
formulaic.
That's right. They're a formula.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that, I suppose. But after a while, it gets a little boring.
Of course.
You've been there, you've done that.
Yeah.
And I guarantee anybody that's reading my books will not find that.
No.
They will
no.
not be able to predict what's going to happen.
No. It's not just a basic good versus evil kind of.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Exactly.
So it's book three is called The Master's Eye?
The Master Eye, yes.
The Master Eye. Okay.
Right.
And any idea when that is going to be coming out?
At this stage, we're probably looking at early 2009. That's where we're aiming for, yes.
Wonderful.
I got
a question for you about the demon inside.
Sure.
Okay, so you've got some pretty extensive battle scenes, ship battle scenes
book? Yes, in Demon Inside, definitely I do.
Yeah. So tell us about your experience with ships. Have you been a sailor? Where did that come from?
Actually, no. I hate the water,
to be
honest. No, I won't even take a bath. I'm terrified of water.
No.
So I had no ship experience, sailing experience whatsoever. Yeah, that was all done by research, a lot of it, to get the terms and the terminology, everything down, how ship moves, that sort of thing. But the biggest problem I had with the battles I envisioned in Demon were rather extensive, but Edward's world doesn't have gunpowder. So how can you have those type of battles without gunpowder? So I basically came up with the idea of catapults and small weapons called slingers.
Oh, okay.
And these weapons throw rocks and burning sacks of burlap filled with glass and small rocks, stuff like that. That's how I got around it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I do not care for the water,
so
personally.
That's funny. Did you have a bad experience? Did you get thrown in
the
pool?
A few of them, actually.
Really?
A few of them that has left me a healthy respect for water.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
I'll drink it, and that's about as far as it goes.
Oh, my God. Oh, boy. So tell us what the age range is for this series. Is this okay for young adults as well?
Well, there's no question it's a violent story. I mean, it all began for Edward with violence, and so there's no way to escape the fact that I would say 14 minimum.
Okay.
To read, I would not want a 10 or 11 year old reading this. Some of the violence is graphic at times, but you know I debated when I was writing these, should I use that kind of language and graphic scenes? But when you've got big men swinging swords, people are going to get hurt.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes you need the visual.
Yeah. it's a big part of the story.
It's a big part of the story. This whole story revolves around violence toward him, Edward, and he would put it in his world, mm-hmm. which he does.
So is there any kind of a little teaser you can leave listeners with today about the third installment? Because I know they're waiting for it.
All will be revealed in How's This? Edward's story, I won't say whether it'll end happy for him in his own or real life or mm-hmm. what happens, but it will end happy.
A healing happens.
Yes.
Okay.
A definite healing will happen.
Okay, great.
Yes.
So before we kind of close up here, Terry, I want to hear a little bit more about your internet bookstore and really, tell us a little bit about it and then how, I can't even imagine, it's a very busy business for you, how you're really balancing your writing career with it.
That can be tough at times. It really can. The bookstore is usually a 6 to 7 day a week job, and I start at 6 a.m. and usually finish at 4 p.m.
Wow.
So I have to sort of get my writing in from that time. My wife and I have a very firm agreement that when she gets home at night from her job, everything stops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we sit, we talk about our day, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I basically have 2 to 2.5 hours a night to write during the week, and that's when I get most of it done.
And you can do it in that time.
Well, that's the best part. While I'm working, sometimes putting books into packages and stuff like that is almost like an assembly line. So a lot of times I'm thinking plot lines.
Okay.
So by the time I sit down with my laptop, I already know what I'm going to write. It's just a matter of my fingers being fast enough to get the words out. And, you know, initially I started with the two-finger pluck typing, but I've gotten much faster and better over the years, so that helps.
Oh, God. Well, did you have to take any kind of classes to basically learn how to put a book together, you know?
No, actually, no. I believe I studied at the hands of the masters themselves.
Yeah.
And just over the many years of writing, or reading, pardon me, that's not to say it was easy, that it was just, okay, let's write a few words and it all made sense and looked like a novel. It did take some time to put it all together,
mm-hmm.
but it just seems natural.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't taken any courses or classes or anything.
I think that's a really great point that you're making, that because you were so immersed in reading as a young mm-hmm. child, that you really picked up on that kind of indirectly.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't help but
pick
up on these things. We're talking thousands and thousands of books. Over time, you're going to learn how to structure a sentence and things like that subconsciously. You're not even realizing you're learning it.
You know? That's such a great point. Parents need to really be aware of that. You know?
I think they should be. You don't have to know what a dangling participle is. And all,
right.
You know, like, I still don't know half of the technical terms for writing, but I can write because of the reading I've done,
mm-hmm.
not because a teacher on a chalkboard wrote this is an adverb and this is, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So.
Very interesting. So what are you reading these days?
Well, I've been reading Joe Abercrombie.
Uh-huh.
He's one of the rising stars in fantasy right now. The Blade itself and I can't think of the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Before They Are Hanged, these two books. They're quite different,
mm-hmm.
which is what I like.
Mm-hmm.
For fantasy anyway, it's quite different. That's what I've been reading. And I don't read just fantasy. I do read Michael Connelly, people like that as well. So I have varied interests.
So a lot of modern writers.
Absolutely modern writers. I do find, though, that I don't read nearly as much as I used to, obviously. I don't have a lot of free time.
Sure.
So, but it's nice to see what other writers are doing.
Yeah.
You know, get an idea where the genre's going.
Yeah.
Because it is changing. Guys like Joe Abercrombie and Scott Lynch and Patrick Rothfuss, these guys, they are changing the norm that most people expect in fantasy, and that's great.
In what way?
Well, it's not the Lord of the Rings type of storyline that we're so used to seeing in fantasy. They're stepping out of it. Maybe it's becoming a little harder, a little harsher in some ways, but it's refreshing, I find.
Mm-hmm.
That is the reason why I wrote the series to begin with, though, is to get something different out there.
Yeah.
And it seems like other authors have the same idea, which is great.
Yeah, that's great. It needs to change.
I think it does.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, change is always good, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you stand still, you don't go anywhere.
No.
Obviously.
Gather dust.
Yeah.
So your website then, Terry, is thezonewar.com?
That's correct.
And your book can be purchased through your website?
Yeah, through my website or Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any of the major sites.
Great.
On the internet, sure.
Great. Purchase locally as well?
In chapters up here in Canada. It's sort of like a Barnes & Noble store here.
Okay. And I imagine down in the U.S. that can be just ordered.
It can be purchased there. That's right.
Yeah.
Or through Barnes & Noble or any of the major stores.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad to have had you on the program today. It's such a this is such an interesting series. I think you've put something out there that's unique and refreshing, and readers are loving your series so far. So really, it just continued success to you.
Oh, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, definitely. Terry, did you have any final thoughts you wanted to share with listeners?
I just want to say thank you to everybody that's read the book, and those of you that haven't thought of picking it up yet, maybe you should, because it will surprise you. I guarantee it.
Yes. Great, great final words. Thanks, Terry. I hope to talk with you again.
Thank you.
Take care.
You too.
All right, listeners, I've been talking with Terry Cloutier. His Zone Wars series is out now. It's going to be a trilogy. He's got the first two books out, the first one, The Demon Inside, and the second, The Balance of Power. And you can find out more about Terry Cloutier through his website, thezonewar.com. And once again, just to reiterate, the books can be purchased through his website as well as through online booksellers. So once again, I just appreciate you listening to Inside Scoop Live today. I hope you've enjoyed the program. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.
Blog Talk Radio.